In today's tutorial, I'm going to show you how to use a navigate function in SimpleBoot. And I will also show you exercise 4 in tutorial 1. I hope you tried. So it's actually an important example to show you what could go wrong when you try to mix correlators. Okay, so this is the sample code for use navigate function. This sample code is actually quite simple. It's almost the same as the one I showed you on Monday. So it's using two operator mix. Those are the crossing vectors. Nothing changed from Monday. It's the same. So I will just do you want me to go through it again or it's
It's okay.
Okay, good. So crossing vector blocks and those gap, those are the same as previous one. Then I will just tell you what's different. The only difference is before I have zero as objective. Now I set objective to be identity block, and I set normalization to be some function depends on this gap configuration. So what this function do is that it take what you specified in the gap configuration. So it take those vector in this gap configuration and just sum up a few vector, then give I think I forgot exactly the detail, but I start from the gap start from the gap, then some maybe some vector with so I think what's inside the code is that let's say I start from delta gap, then plus 0.02 times n, and scan a few n up to delta gap plus 6. For one channel you specified in the gap configuration, then it run over all the channels. If this is n by n matrix, I think I took the trace. So if it's n by n matrix, I just took the trace to. So it's an automatic way to produce a vector inside the cone. So this basically guarantees it's finite. And here is an example for GFF navigator. So in GFF navigator, let me copy this to here so it's easy. So in the GFF navigator, inside there are a few terms. So this term represents Z2 even term, and I plug in delta equals to 2 epsilon. Let me show you what is this term. I think I had a typo here. It should be this one. So that's just the variable defined in SimpleBoot represent external operator. So I plug in 2 delta epsilon, and this is the OPE for GFF. For the Z2 even channel. So Z2 even channel, the crossing vector is 2 by 2 matrix. It's this one. So I have to plug in the correct OP for GFF. So this part plug in to delta sigma and the corresponding GFF OP. And this part plug in delta sigma plus delta epsilon, and the OP is 1. So this term corresponding to the GFF navigator. So to use to use GFF navigator, you should first compute a GFF value. Or you can use this automatic way to produce the normalization vector. OK. So the rest are the same as Monday's tutorial.
Why do I want to use GFF? In what case would I prefer GFF over Sigma?
It has a physical meaning. But I'm a bit lazy, so I always use the automatic one. Okay, so this part load the navigator package. So in this is the simple boot package for navigator computation. It's not automatically loaded. Whenever you want to use navigator, you have to manually load this package. So this package implement the BFGS algorithm, and also implement the computation of the gradient. So this package.
I know you explained this yesterday, but what is the reconfig CMD doing? One more.
Okay, let me show you. It's something. So this is the configuration variable. It contains all the configuration detail, like your server, your account, all the binaries. So what does this do is that it takes whatever string you give to it and replace those variables if the variable exists in the configuration file. So for example, this gives you that.
Okay.
The reason I written in this way is just inside the code, I can always refer to this variable. I don't need to put explicit path for it. Thanks for the question. If you have a question, please ask. You are doing a service to other participants. OK, so for navigator computation in a simple boot, you have to use SDPB 2.4, a modified version based on 2.4.0, and also SDP 2 input mode specifically for that version. The 2.4.0 format of this version are different from 2.5.0. So in principle, I can modify those orgs for 2.5.0, but I haven't done it. So you need to install those.
Sorry, but this part here is the same for both of the navigator methods, or in the GFF or the other one? This part, is it the same for?
This part is the same for all navigator computation. So this SDPB is a special is in a version I modified. Basically, the difference between that one is that. So in the morning, I explained if you do optimization wrong, and you want to use hot start, it's quite problematic, because at the end of your old SDP computation, mu is very small. Usually, mu go to 10 to minus 30. Therefore, your old solver status, the solver variable, are too close to degeneracy. So when you hot start to use a checkpoint that is too close to degeneracy, you run into trouble. Usually, the neuron will easily stall. So what's the way to solve it? The final elegant way would be using skydiving. But for navigator computation, there is a way to try to hot start in optimization run. Basically, assuming this is mu, assuming this is the free variable. So imagine this is the central path. So the idea is that you run the solver until certain mu, let's say maybe 10 to minus 8. Then here you save a middle checkpoint. So until this point, you save a middle checkpoint. Then you continue run to mu go to 0. But then in your new SDP, you use this checkpoint to start the new run. And in the new run, there is an option in that program try to you run a few iterations, then save another middle checkpoint. But now the question is that you want to save the checkpoint as small as possible so that you can recycle more computation from previous run. But then you don't want to save the checkpoint too low. If you save the checkpoint too late, then your new run could be stalled. You see, this is a balance. You want to save more to recycle previous run, but if your mu is too small, then the checkpoint could stall. Then the only way to solve this has to be a robust stalling recover mechanism. So in this code, if it detects the runs stalled, then it will try to aggressively increase mu to lift the solver out of stalling. So basically, this solution, I think it's quite robust. It do those things automatically. Okay, so that's the modified SDPB. This option fits the prefactor. So in the morning, I told you we can easily compute the gradient respect to variation of B, C, capital B. But you shouldn't change A. So if you specify this option, simple boot will fix the prefactor, therefore fix the bilinear basis, therefore fix A. Okay, so this part specifies the option for BFGS. So first one, the algorithm. You can specify, I'm sorry, I have a strange name. So you can choose my BFGS or constrained BFGS or none. You can put a none here, then. Okay, so constrained BFGS is the BFGS algorithm for finding the boundary of the feasible region. And this one, if you put this option here, that will go to the minimal navigator point. So this part set a bounding box.
So what is none?
If you put none, this code will compute whatever point you instruct the code to compute, then stop. But then this code will compute the gradient for you. So sometimes it's still useful.
So if you want to check the point, if it's allowed or not allowed, you see if it's negative.
Yeah, yeah. If it's set to none, you just do this manually. So this option only affects the boundary find boundary run. So if you specify feasibility Q to be true, then what happens? In the morning, I talked about if we want to find the boundary, what we do is that we start from some point, we build a quadratic model, and we try to go to the boundary in that quadratic model. But then so there are two cases. What happens if the quadratic model don't have a negative region? In that case, this algorithm just go to the minimal point in the quadratic model.
But if the quadratic model does have a negative region, then it will go to the boundary in that negative region. However, sometimes even the current point is still have positive navigator value. That means it's still in the infeasible region. But then it's possible the quadratic model has a negative region. And then in that case, it will go to the negative region in the quadratic model. So what I'm trying to say is that it might start go to the boundary in the quadratic model, even you haven't ever found a feasible point. So this option, if you turn it to be true, then it will demand you first find a feasible point, then start finding the boundary. So this is a more robust way to do things. Sometimes I find it could go wrong if you set this to be false.
Sorry, Nick, but so with Navigator, we don't need any more Delaunay search or something like that, right?
With Navigator, you don't need a Delaunay search. Delaunay search is for feasibility test.
Yeah, but with this, you can even find the island, right?
You can find the boundary of the island. If you want to scan the island, Delaunay search is a better way to do.
Delaunay the shape of the island.
If you want to...
This way, what do you find? The boundary?
Okay, good. So let me go through the options, and it will be clear. So here are some stop criterion for the precision goal. This is for gradient. This is for sorry, I forgot. This one is for navigator function. and this is the initial inverse of Hessian. So you can set this to be automatic. If you set it to be automatic, it will take will set up a Hessian according to your bounding box. So you have a bounding box. If you take this to be automatic and some small number, roughly speaking, in first step, it will take a small step. So if you put this to be 1%, then roughly in first step, the step size is 1% respect to the bounding box, roughly. It's not precise. Okay, so this option specify which direction you want to optimize. So this means you want to maximize delta sigma. You can put this to be mean. That means minimize delta sigma.
The bounding box, how do you choose it?
Okay, so why you need a bounding box? The reason is that for Eastern Island, the entire feasible region is this island, but so this island is so this island is around 0.518 and 1.412. But then around here, you have a big feasible region, a continent of feasible point. And here it's around 0.55. So if you don't set a bounding box, the solver might go here. Therefore, you want to set up a bounding box to constrain the solver to a certain region.
Yeah, but what if you don't know? So like in general, you just...
You could set a big bounding box.
And then you decide whatever, okay.
Yeah, you let the solver run to see what happened.
Thanks.
So this is a special option in...
Can you explain BFGS optimized direction again?
This means we want to, okay, so specifically this one, this means we want to maximize first coordinate. We want to maximize first coordinate. If you put this to be mean, that means you want to minimize first coordinate. You can choose this to be 2, then it will be maximize second coordinate.
So it's finding like the edge of the island or like
yes.
The tip of the island?
Yes. this is a special option to tell you how to, in the light search, so if you minimize navigator function, that's standard BFTS. But if you use BFTS to find the boundary, it's a bit non-standard. So what happened is that, imagine this is the navigator function, and this is the island. So the solver, imagine you try to ask the solver to find the boundary, which is here. So the solver might, in some step, the solver might go from inside the island to outside the island. So the solver might go to the infeasible region. Then the solver has to decide, do we want to backtrack a bit, or do we want to keep going? So this option basically constrains when do you want to backtrack. Basically, specifically, that condition says if the navigator value, let's call the navigator value here f1, and the value here f2. So that condition says if f2 is smaller than 2 times f1, then it keeps going. Otherwise, it will backtrack. The reason I set this infeasibility tolerance option is that if you don't have this, sometimes the solver just keep moving and just go to more and more infeasible region. So you have to constrain the solver a little bit.
Sorry, I still don't understand. Why do you want to find the boundary of the island when you can use Delaunay to find the shape of the island? What is the difference when you say boundary of the island?
Okay.
The island.
Okay, very good question. It's actually the main point of this. So the main point is that just imagine we have a bootstrap setup, and you have to scan 4 deltas and 9 OPEs, assuming you have this problem. That's totally 11 dimensional problem. If you do Delaunay search, it's impossible. Delaunay search in 11 dimensional, that's totally impossible. But then you don't need the precise shape of the island in this 11 dimension. You just need to maximize delta sigma, minimize delta sigma to find the error bar for delta sigma. You don't care about the rest of the parameter. So although detecting the shape of the island in high dimensional space is very hard, but then you don't need that. You just need the error bar for certain parameter. So if you do this way, that's doable. If you use Delaunay, that's not doable.
Okay, so this you're saying you can scan a subset of the space with navigator, instead with Delaunay, you can only do the whole boundary of the in the n dimensional space.
Yeah.
Okay.
So first problem, Delaunay problem in 11 dimensional. This is subject to curse of dimensionality. As your dimension get higher and higher, the number of points you have to test grow exponentially.
You cannot use Delaunay only on a subset,
how?
Subset of, I don't know, just ask. No.
Okay. Of course, you can say, let's say we fix delta 1 to delta 4. Of course, in this example I told you, you have OP ratio, you can use OP scan cutting surface algorithm to do it. But just imagine if you have 10 generic delta and you want to scan it. You might think, okay, let's fix delta 1 and delta 2 in Delaunay search. Then let those to be free and use Delaunay search to find a pointer in here. Then scan this. But then that's still grow exponentially. The cost will grow exponentially anyway. There is no way you could avoid that based on Delaunay search.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
Can I understand that the navigator is like scanning the rectangle of the island, the most outside rectangle of the island, just the boundary. So it's like scanning the.
Could you repeat?
Using the navigator, you can scan the maximal of sigma and minimal of sigma, and maximal of its long, minimal of its long. That's like scanning the rectangle of this, is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So you can go to this 2 point basically.
I see.
So this option. Okay, I think I don't want to explain this two option to you. It's just some detail in light search. I think these two choices works pretty well for most of the case. So this one is the infinitesimal you use to compute dBd, say d capital B. So to compute the gradient, we need to produce the SDP condition here at x0. And in the parameter space, we have to produce another SDP at, let me call it p0 and p0 plus dp. So you change parameter a little bit. You get b, say, b here, and b prime, say, prime, b prime here, and subtract to compute the gradient. So this option is the distance between two SDP. Okay, so this part calls a standard to run the navigator computation. So here, this option is a special option for this modified SDPV. It tries to save checkpoint when mu below 10 to minus 8. So let me show you an output. I think this is the first point. Yeah, I choose this to be initial point, and let's take a look at what happened. So those are the run. So the arrows. We discussed this morning. And here you see, around 10 to minus 8, it saves a middle checkpoint. And this is the checkpoint that will be used for to hot start the new run. This is another computation at a different point. You see it. The starting point already below the threshold. So I set the threshold to be 10 to minus 8. So this is already below that. Then it will save a middle checkpoint up to certain iteration. So the default setting is 10. After 10 iteration, it saves a middle checkpoint. Okay, so this is the result of that run. The point's navigator value at this point and the gradient of the navigator function. So you can see after 35 steps, it goes to the navigator value become very close to zero. And if you look at the gradient, so you look at this gradient, you can see partial n over partial delta sigma is 10 to minus 6. But partial n over partial delta epsilon is very small. So what does that mean? That means now the solver is already at here, so that the derivative in this direction is non-zero, but in this direction is zero. So here you can see that's correct condition when you maximize delta sigma. So this value is the boundary of delta sigma. Yes.
Are you looking for the boundary?
Yes. So here the condition. I set the condition to be maximized delta sigma.
Okay, so that's the reason that the navigator is not becoming more negative, it's getting closer to zero. Because the boundary is at the navigator being zero.
You mean this?
Yes, yes. So it becomes negative, but then it goes back toward zero. right?
Yeah, so this is already very small, and the gradient is also correct, so that's pretty much close to boundary. Oh, of course, you can estimate, take this divided by this, you can estimate what's the error from here. Okay.
So on this plot, there's like kind of like turnaround point.
Oh, so this is the path for the run. The path go here and go back to here. I think this point is the bounding box. Let me see what is my bounding box. Yeah. I think it went to here to hit the bounding box, then go back. No. Is this bounding box? I think no.
Like before it reaches that point, it just thinks.
Oh, okay, okay.
The gradient shows that it should go that way.
So now I understand what's happening. This is not bounding box. Sorry. So what happens is that you have this island. You have this island and a continent of feasible region. So the navigate function is very small here, but bigger. The navigate function is.
So are the line search point also being plotted on this?
Yes.
Okay, so it's like not just the Newton step, but also Newton step with all of these lines.
Yes.
Okay, then I understand.
So the navigate function is bigger in those regions, but very small in here. So basically, this is a very shallow valley. The solver has to first move to the valley and moving along the valley. That's what happened. Yeah, so this plot, I plot the path from BFGS from navigator computation, and those islands are from Monday's tutorial, and the navigator end here.
So is it very sensitive to some parameter you set in the BFGS method, whether you actually make that turn when you get to the shallow region of the navigator function?
It's not sensitive. There is not much parameter here. I think the only parameter could affect the behavior are these two. But these two just constraints like search behavior. It's just some safeguard. I think this time behavior are inherent to the valley. Basically, the algorithm has to first find the valley, then
yeah.
Yes.
What was the blue star?
Hmm?
The blue star?
The last point in navigator computation. That's the boundary.
Not allowed in that plot.
Yeah, that's why navigator function is a better method. This point should be allowed, but in DeLaunay search, it's not accurate enough. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yes.
Thanks. So it's a very sharp point then. The island had a sharp peak.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Thanks.
Okay.
Want to understand this as best I can. It's a very sharp corner in the trajectory.
Yes.
What are the parameters that make sure that you don't miss a sharp turn like that, that you don't overshoot it?
You mean this?
Yes. Yeah.
You can't overshoot it because on this side, the navigator function is quite bigger and positive. On this side, it's bigger and positive. Just imagine you are walking in this valley. You try to descend to the valley. Then if you go to another side, you have to backtrack, then walk along the valley. Okay, so once you finish this computation, now in SimpleBoot, there is a function you can call to compute the EFM spectrum. So that's this function.
So this, the argument of this function is a list of gap configuration. So let me show you what is this. So this has to be a list of gaps. So this has to be one-to-one corresponding to the positivity matrix you set up in the SDP. So this is a list of positivity matrix. Let me show you. So if we print them out, that's a list of positivity matrix. The condition in this list has to be one-to-one corresponding to condition here. That's why I have to manually include the V theta term. So you see here, first the condition is the V theta term. Then the rest of the condition are from this gap configuration. So when you compute the EFM, you have to, this part calls the gap configuration and produce the rest of the conditions, but you have to manually include the first one. Once you construct this data, you give it to this function, then this function will produce EFM for you. So this is the EFM data I, I'm sorry, something is wrong. Let me. I think I deleted the data from my local. I think I deleted the data from my local laptop. But anyway, so then you can print out this data. Let me check if I can download that from the. I can use this to download. Let me check if I still have that on the cluster. No, sorry, I already deleted it. Anyway, so if you run this, you get the spectrum and the OPE. So that's extreme functional method. The second argument here, minus one, indicate in the computed points which step you want to do EFM. So minus one means the last one. You can also put whatever step number here to compute EFM for other points.
So how does the extremal functional return OPE coefficients? I thought it just returns scaling dimensions.
Okay. Let me review that. So, So from here you can get a zero. That's the spectrum. After you get a zero, you plug in those zero to here, and try to you can put some random coefficient here, but then the right hand side will be non-zero.
Yeah.
Then you can try to if I understand correctly, this should be what's happening in. So I this code uses spectrum.py. In order for that function to work, you have to install the spectrum.py package. I think that's what's happening in that package. It tried to first get a zero, then plugging back to.
So it solves this transcendental equation, or does it solve like just the linear system?
This is not transcendental at all. It's linear system.
Yeah, I mean, in the derivative basis.
This is truncated bootstrap equation.
Yeah. Mm. But then it's over-constrained, right?
That's why the OPE out of this is just an approximation. It's over-constrained. So you can ask, or you try to minimize the lambda until the right-hand side is small.
Zero.
So it's not the actual solution to the equation.
Okay, so that's the navigator wrong.
So in special key wise, there should be a parent that control that which zero will you...
Yes.
How do you modify it?
I hard coded it. I should make it an option, and I will make it an option.
Okay.
Sorry. Okay. So next, I want to let me see. So. Okay, so let me show you tutorial 1A exercise 4. And I want to use Navigator to explain what's wrong in that computation. So in that computation, you have to use a special setup. That setup is that you set a dual error threshold much bigger than primal error threshold. And in this computation, you never saw a dual feasible jump. So for example, let me show you the typical run. By the way, so this exercise asks you to scan the continent. So the file is same as the island file. Just now, we want to scan the continent. So the end result is this one. But let me show you a few actual SDPP computation. So this is an actual run. Do you say something wrong? You say you never find a dual jump. SDPP just continue going, and all the error becomes smaller and smaller. And when the dual error becomes smaller than 10 to minus 10, with that option I specified, it end with find a dual feasible solution. So that's controlled by this parameter here. So it never find a dual jump. And in this way, I produced this plot. That's the tip of this continent, this part. Actually, this run is quite problematic. So for points here, you don't find a dual jump. For points here, you actually also don't find a primal jump. In actual mixed correlator bootstrap, actually it's very important you find the primal jump and the dual jump. If you don't find that, it's very bad. So let me explain to you why it's necessary to find the primal jump and the dual jump.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Why didn't you hard code it to see that prime mean prime jump? Do you Why didn't you do that?
What do you mean?
You can look at the SDPP file and see, okay, if there's a prime jump, you correct prime.
Yes.
I have a sticky note on my monitor.
I don't quite understand your...
See, the light goes... Anyway, go ahead.
Why does it say primal dual, the primal jump found versus like solution ruled out?
Yeah.
Oh.
In the SDP language instead of the bootstrap language.
I made this choice.
If you do asymmetric bootstrap, this is not.
So I made this choice when I, 6 years ago, when I just started everything from scratch. I think it's a bad choice, but I couldn't change it now. Otherwise, all the code will be incompatible. A lot of bad names in the package, sorry.
It's generally very well named, but this one, I've got that little sticky note on my mind.
Okay. So let's try to understand
what gets wrong at the tip of the continent. It's actually very, very important. When you do mixed collate bootstrap, you have to understand this. So this notebook is another navigator computation. It's same as the first navigator computation I showed you. The only difference is that in this Ethan OE MMA, in this notebook, I set everything to computed inside Mathematica. I set the SDP to be computed inside Mathematica. So in that way, I can have access to normalization objective. I can extract this alpha and take a look to see what's wrong. Let me, so this part, my original plan is try to explain to you what are those templates and what's the meaning of those symbols. But let me skip that. And you can actually have a mathematical expression involving those symbols and ask a simple boot to evaluate that template. Basically, take the polynomial from scalar block mode and plug into whatever mathematical expression you want to evaluate. For example, here it's a code constructed as a Taylor expansion for this block, and you can plot that. You can plot that convolved block. So so basically, used in this way, you can explicitly construct data, SDP data inside Mathematica, and evaluate whatever expression you want to do. Okay, but let me skip that. And I want to use this file to show you something. So in this part, I made three navigator computation at this 3 point. So this is the tip of the continent I took from this file. I choose 3 points. One is above the continent, another one is around the tip, another one is below the peninsula. Okay, so you see here I set the algorithm to be none, so I only compute this 3 point, then it end. And let's take a look at the red point. So red point is a point slightly above the continent. This part of the code try to compute the functional alpha. So remember, inside the SDPB, we have this y variable. So we have this small y variable. That's corresponding to alpha, but it's not exactly alpha. So this part of the code compute alpha from y. So this part compute functional alpha. So I download to my local computer, and I plot. So alpha have five components. Remember, this alpha have five components corresponding to five equations, and each component have this mn, which is the derivative on z and z bar. So this part of the code. Take alpha 1, this is still a vector, and take norm for that. So that norm is this value. Same thing for R2, R4, R3, R5. And this side, I plot the equation for that component. So if you look at it, you noticed something wrong. You see, what happens is that this is that red point above the peninsula. So that point is disallowed. But if you look at what's happening inside the SDPP, it rules out that point by using single correlate sigma, 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 sigma. That's the non-zero component. But for all the mixed correlate, it rescale everything to zero. So what's happened here is that Although SDPP can rule out that point, but it rules out that point using single correlator, not using mixed correlator. So that's why you don't say dual jump. Because if you set this to be zero, if that's the only solution, then this system does not satisfy Slater condition. Because in the capital X, capital Y, there will be some block corresponding to this part, and that part have determinant zero. Therefore, that doesn't satisfy Slater condition. Therefore, you never find you never say dual jump. Okay, now you might say, no problem. Why I still draw out this point? So this is the red point. I draw out this point using the single correlator. That's perfectly fine. Why I need to worry about that? Okay. So let me show you if you do this thing for all three points. Here is the result. Let me make this a bit smaller. So red point is the point I just showed you. For purple point, this point is a feasible point. The navigate function is negative. But if you look at it, you still see it rescale all the rest correlate to zero. Blue point is fine. Blue point have non-trivial mix. But purple point is not fine. Purple point is still essentially single correlated, even though you are in the feasible region. But there is no non-trivial mix at the purple point. So then we are not surprised if you use this to compute EFM. Let me see. I think I have that. Oh, sorry. Somehow I forgot to include the EFM data. So what's happening is that if you make an EFM computation at the feasible region, you would thought at the feasible region you can reconstruct the solution, including exchange channel. But if you do the EFM here, you find that in the Z2 odd channel, there is no spectrum at all. That's not a surprise because there is no information in those equations. Those equations just are not used. That's why you might thought you are doing a mixed correlate bootstrap, but it's not. It's just a single correlate. This result, hot start in simple boot is automatically, it will use hot start, but the end result are independent of hot start.
Could you make the plot a little bit bigger?
Yes.
Thank you.
So you can see at this point it's quite problematic. Although it's a feasible point, but if we don't get a correct spectrum out of it, then it's not mixed correlate bootstrap because you don't have a correct spectrum. When you do mixed correlate bootstrap, first thing you should check is check whether your bootstrap setup is actually a valid mixing setup or not. In many times, this could happen. You thought you set up a mixed correlated system, but in the end, it's not a mixed correlated system. Okay, so then the question is, how do we solve that? So this is a third file I sent to you. The difference is that now we do navigate computation, but we plug in OPE. We plug in OPE ratio, and we scan that ratio using navigator. So let me show you the result. This is the result. We start with this point, delta sigma, delta epsilon, and the OPE ratio. And we perform the navigator run. And this is the final result. So in this plot, this is the path. The red line is the path in the navigator run. And eventually, this
is trying to minimize delta sigma. So try to go to the tip of the peninsula. So it eventually ends here. And the green points are the feasible point. They have negative navigator value. So those points have negative navigator value. They are feasible point. OK, yes.
Okay, that was a stupid question. But when they originally did these plots, how did they get the peninsula? Because
they did exactly the same thing as tutorial one exercise four.
No, but my point is they shouldn't also be able to get primal dual jumps.
They no. They never get primal dual jump for this plot, I'm pretty sure.
Right, but then all the points, shouldn't they end with max complementarity exceed
that? No. It doesn't end with maximum complementarity. It just end with dual feasible solution that's controlled by your dual feasible threshold.
But I understand, but to get an allowed point, you also need to finish with primal feasible solution. Because for them to label it allowed, they would have to find primal feasible.
In this setup, so basically, in the morning, I told you what's the rigorous way of using feasibility mode.
Yes.
That's primal feasible jump.
Mm-hmm.
But before people just do this, it's restrictively speaking, it's not in rigorous feasible mode.
No, I agree, but the point is here you're not going to get a primal feasible solution, right? Not a solution.
You don't get the solution to the full mixed correlator system, but you get the solution to the single correlator system.
No, I agree with that. But when they did this plot, they did it with a mixed correlator.
Yes.
And in the peninsula, they put some points as allowed. What was the exit status they had there? What did they use to label these points as allowed?
Just a
threshold.
So it was the primal threshold?
Yes.
Yeah, jumps did not exist. As
I remember that, but
until like 5, 6 years.
My problem was that with this issue, whenever I run into it, I would never get a primal feasible solution at all.
Yeah.
But you might have just put the threshold differently.
Yeah. So it's something artificial. It's something artificial. You control the threshold, then you put a dual threshold larger than primal threshold. You get primal feasible. You put you get dual feasible.
Right.
That's why this is not a rigorous way of using feasibility mode.
So was that the actual plot though then? Because it sounds like if they changed one of the thresholds, they might have got a slightly different plot then.
That's true.
Okay.
But the reason you can label this as the primal feasible points is because for the primal point, eventually you don't find a dual. So this has something to do with that state condition. Basically, there is a solution to the system. That solution is that you have nothing in the mixed channel, but then you have a solution to the single correlator. But then this one is precisely, if we translate to SDP language, in the SDP language, capital X and capital Y for that solution have a determinant equals to zero. So it's not a solution satisfies state condition.
By the way, I'm looking at this paper, and it says our condition for feasibility is absolute value of primal objective is less than 10 to the minus 13, which is fairly small, but it's quite high relative to like 10 to the minus 30.
Yeah, usually it's 10 to the minus 30.
Yeah, so you can read this, and you can see that they are actually not getting any exactly the name it's saying.
I'm not trying to attack that paper, so it's totally fine.
I'm not talking about
So it's totally fine to do this. That region, in fact, is feasible. That is feasible region.
That was my
entire card. So this is the correct feasible region. Just the way of using SDP B is not that rigorous. Okay, so let's go back to the navigator run, and I want to explain to you what's happening. So
those are navigator computation, and in those computation you you find that those points are actually have negative navigator value. Now you can take a point that in my previous file, the result is that it rescale it scale away all the mixed correlator. Now you take a point here, and from here this part of the code check the functional. Now you see the functional is non-trivial in all correlator. So basically, the way to solve the trivial mixing in this case is that you scan OPE. Once you scan OPE, you force the mixed correlator system to be actually mixed. And then, of course, if you compute EFM out of it, it does have non-trivial spectrum in the Z2 order channel. Okay.
Ning, sorry, could you just repeat how you detect that it's not using the mixed correlator constraints?
Could you repeat?
How was it again that you detect that it's not?
Oh, okay. Good. Thanks.
Just look at the functional.
Let me explain the data here. So the data here is in this computation, I let V theta term to be 2x2 matrix. I'm not doing OP scan. It's not OP scan. So it's just the two parameter, delta sigma, delta epsilon. I take 3 points. I do the computation. Now, these 2 points don't have jump, don't have primordial jump. This point do have jump. This point have dual feasible jump. And after the computation, I extract the alpha out of this 3 point. That's 5 component, and each component is in a vector. And I compute the norm of this vector, and I put it here.
Euclidean. Euclidean.
Yes, Euclidean. Then from here, you realize the red point, alpha is non-zero for first equation, but basically zero for the rest. This, of course, is controlled by the threshold. If you let SDPB run longer, this will get smaller and smaller. Same for purple. Although purple points is a feasible point, but again, even in that feasible point, you would sort it, for a feasible point, you have a solution, but then that's the solution to single correlator, not to the mixed correlator system. And for blue point, that's correct. Why blue point is correct? Because it's impossible to rule out this point using single correlator. In single correlator, it's just this part is feasible. Therefore, this part you do have mixed correlator system.
And blue point was marginally ruled out?
No, it just means if you don't scan OPE, this setup in those regions, this setup is trivial mix. The solution to this system is we are asking whether alpha exists or not. But then you can find an alpha to rule out this point, but that alpha is only non-trivial on first equation and zero for everything else if you don't do OP scan. So the conclusion is that.
So you are wasting your energy.
No, not you are wasting your energy. Why we want to do mixed correlator bootstrap? We want to have extra constraint, and we want to extract the spectrum from the mixed correlator system. But if you have the trivial mixing problem, you don't have a mixed channel. You don't see spectrum. So this part, you actually go to the tip, you just see single correlator data. Therefore, what's the purpose of it? But the way to solve it is that you plug in OPE, you force the system to be mixed system. Then, at previously at that purple point, you can still find the correct spectrum. So when you do mixed collapse system, you have to check whether the system is actually mixed or not.
So if you plot the external functional with like the red point, you won't see the dips from the descendants of like sigma, sigma, epsilon, epsilon. You'll only see the single correlator dips. Right?
Yeah. You only see single correlated data. In the rest of it, it's just zero. Alpha dot f as a function of delta are constant zero. So there is nothing there.
Would you understand at the sovereign level, like how to force y to take non-zero, to stay a component of y to stay away from zero?
Even at SDP, even at bootstrap level, we don't have a generic way to solve it. What I'm telling you is, in this setup, OP scan can solve that. But if you want, if
no, how, like which component change to force Y stay away from zero?
Because now you scan OPE. When you scan OPE, you demand lambda sigma sigma epsilon and lambda epsilon 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 take some value. This will involve the rest of the equation. So this force system has to be mixed. But I just give you, this is a solution to this specific case, OP scan solve it. But I tried many mixed collator system. In some cases, that's the generic way to solve it. Sometimes even you do OP scan, strange thing can happen. My guess is that maybe you have to put a gap bigger. That's a very strange thing. I'm not claiming I fully understand it, but I just say this is an essential problem you have to look at when you do mixed correlator bootstrap.
In optimization, if you want something to stay away from zero, we just add a Lagrange multiplier. Why can't we do the same thing?
I think in this case, in SDP level, the only solution you can have is a solution that don't satisfy Slater condition. So you have to change your problem. It's not we have a bad method that we don't find the right solution. Instead, the problem itself have this inherent issue.
Is it the only minimum it has is that point, or it just gets stuck at a local minimum?
No, it's not get stuck at a local minimum. I believe in that case, the only solution, if you don't do OP scan, then the only solution to this SDP system is a solution that don't satisfy Slater condition.
Is there a proof?
I don't have a proof.
So when you say you believe,
based on you can try to prove it.
No, I don't believe it. I was thinking if you have some, like you've seen evidence, like why to support what you think is it's
okay. I forgot. Sorry. None of those are. So it's not that rigorous. And I just point out the problem to you. This is something you have to solve when you do mixed collator bootstrap. Okay.
Sorry. I have a question. When you're doing navigator, how did you deal with this theta term? You still need to do the cutting surface to.
No. In navigator computation, you just take this three parameter as parameter, and just use BFGS to scan three parameter.
Okay. Also, for sometimes people say we did the mixed correlator bootstrap and we didn't see any new constraints. I have to wonder now if sometimes that's because
I knew some paper have this issue. I knew some paper have this issue. But they don't know it.
So my question is, have you seen instances where the mixed correlators do turn on, but they do not qualitatively improve the constraints?
Could you repeat?
So the background is sometimes people say they do mixed correlator and they see and they see that it doesn't improve anything. But now I'm understanding that maybe it's because those constraints aren't activated.
Yeah.
Of the E scan. Are there examples where the constraints are clearly activated once you look at the functional, but nevertheless there's no real big improvement on it?
So I'm not claiming those people who do mixed correlator but get the same result as single correlator. I'm not saying those are all this trivial mixing case. It's entirely possible it's non-trivial mixing. But the way to test it is you look at EFM. If in EFM you see non-trivial data in exchange in mixed channel, then that's perfectly good. But I don't have an example that it's exactly the same thing.
I'm just asking if you've seen it before, that the mixed correlator turns on, but it does not improve the constraints.
In principle, this depends on, for example, in Ethan case, this depends on the gap you put in dot sigma prime. I guess if you put the gap pretty small, it might become similar to single correlator. But the question would be, it's probably still, in that case, it's probably still a small difference. Your question is, could it be exactly the same? I don't know such example. That's the end of this tutorial. Thanks.